Good morning, everyone. Today is Thursday, February 18th. I'm opening the Committee of the House Energy and Environment Committee. So, and I'm going to start off by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1547A. Beth, would you mind giving us a brief description of this bill, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 1547A clarifies that the term public utility does not include people's utility districts or electric cooperatives for the purposes of regulation by the Oregon Public Utility Commission. There's no fiscal impact or revenue impact.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Senator Olson, welcome.
Thank you very much for this opportunity, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Senator Alan Olson, Senator, representing Senate District 20. Senate Bill 1547A fixes a long-standing and the definitions used in ORS Chapter 757, the chapter that gives the Public Utility Commission its authority to regulate electric utilities. When the definition section in that chapter was written decades ago, there were only two kinds of electric utilities: those companies that we now commonly refer to as investor-owned utilities, which are subject to regulation by the PUC, and a few others owned and operated by cities, which are generally exempt from PUC regulation because they are overseen by their local publicly elected officials. But since the definition section of ORS Chapter 757 was first written, two other kinds of consumer-owned utilities have been created: people's utility districts and rural electric co-ops. Like municipal utilities, PUDs and co-ops are not generally regulated by the PUC. The term for investor-owned utility in Chapter 757 is public utility. Until now, the definitions in Chapter 757 clearly excluded electric utilities owned by cities from this term, but it did not clearly exclude PUDs and the co-ops from this definition. Senate Bill 1547A clarifies that PUDs and co-ops are supposed to be treated like other consumer-owned utilities and not like investor-owned utilities. It conforms the statute to the long-standing practice at the PUC. Rates and most other operational issues for all consumer-owned utilities are determined by local elected officials, not the PUC. Senate Bill 1547A, as amended, has addressed all the concerns initially raised about possible unintended consequences of clarifying these old statutes. The amended bill, 1547A, the Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities Association, the Oregon People's Utility District Association, the Oregon Rural Electric Cooperatives Association, the League of Oregon Cities, and Umatilla Electric Cooperative are all supportive or neutral. Thank you very much, and I'll answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Senator. Questions? Thank you very much. Your testimony was much longer than the bill. The bill is very short, so thank you so much. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing temporarily on this bill, and so we can move on to the informational meeting. So I'm going to open the informational meeting on the Portland Harbor Superfund site, and I'd ask for our guests to come up for this. So, colleagues, this I know we've had some discussions, I think it was a couple sessions ago, on the Portland Harbor Superfund site. We were at a stage in the process where things are progressing in terms of the action that's going to be needed on the site, and we're going to be learning more about it. So this is a chance for this committee and really the body to put it back on our radar as we're getting closer to a possible action that might be needed. All right. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Dennis McLaren. I'm the Regional Administrator for EPA Region 10 in Seattle. That's the region for Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska. And I have with me today Jim Wolford from our Superfund office, the director of our Superfund office in Washington, D.C., and also Cami Grandinetti, who's our senior project manager for the Portland Harbor site. And I'm going to just give a quick overview of some key elements of the process, the location of the actual Superfund site on the river in Portland, what the Superfund process ahead of us still is, a little site information, and then a little bit about the process moving forward. And so with that, we'll jump right into the location. As you can see, the dark blue area is the 10 miles of the Willamette River that are the actual Superfund site. It is adjacent to downtown Portland, but moves from what we have designated River Mile 11 down to River Mile 1 above the confluence with the Columbia River. It's an area where, as you all know, being Oregonians, it's home to a lot of Oregon's major industry. It's an area that is heavily used for recreation, boating and swimming and fishing and camping. It has large ships for shipping and navigation, large ships that have big propellers that can disturb the river bottom with that prop wash. It has ecological habitat as well. It's got tribal fishing and ceremonial significance as well. The tribes are quite involved in the process of putting the plan for the cleanup together. And it's a migratory corridor for salmon, and it's a home for significant numbers of resident fish and some eels that are of particular significance to the tribes. Where are we in the Superfund process? You've probably heard that this has been a long process. It began with listing of the site back in 2000, and we've been working with the Lower Willamette Group as the key group of responsible parties to put together the data and the information to support getting to the point where we are now. Part of that has been putting together, as you see in the yellow, an assessment of the risks, a remedial investigation of the risk assessment. In the lighter green, the part that we've been involved in for the last couple of years is putting together the feasibility study, drafts from the Lower Willamette Group, finalizing those by EPA. We're now in 2016, and on probably the first week in April, we will have the proposed plan for the cleanup out in front of the public, and that will then begin a 60-day public process, public comment process, where we'll be aggressively out seeking public input and input from everyone we can about the proposed plan. We have tribal consultations as part of that and a formal public comment period. And then our goal, our target, our strong target, is to finish having a record of decision by the end of 2016, get it done during this administration. And so we're very much at a critical point right now in getting to that proposed plan, getting that out in front of the public. We've got a public process that's going on right now to get people ready for that proposed plan, and we've been working closely with the state of Oregon and the city of Portland on getting that word out to the public about what the process is going to be and when the public comment period is going to be and what to expect in a proposed plan. So what are the pollution issues in the harbor? The harbor is, after more than 100 years of heavy activity, heavy industrial activity, quite contaminated. There are some very hot spots in the river, and then there are some areas that are not as hot, and I'll go to that with some diagrams of our proposed conceptual plan. But there are 65 contaminants of most concern. The ones you'll hear the most about, though, are metals, pesticides and herbicides, remnants of DDT, dioxins and furans, PCBs and PAHs. PCBs are throughout the river area, and some of the others are more concentrated in hot spots. So we'll show that in a map coming up. Persistent organic pollutants are in the river. They're not readily broken down in the environment, so that's why we need a cleanup plan, and that's why we need active remediation in parts of the river. And let's move on to impacts to wildlife and fish. As you know, fish and other creatures of concern to us in the river are dependent on the whole ecosystem for their support. So what's in the river bottom is part of the food chain. What's in the river bottom is most closely tied with the pollutants on the river bottom, and then that gets eaten and it goes up the food chain right up through the wildlife to humans as well. And the fish accumulate the contaminants, and birds and mammals, including humans as mammals, feed on the fish. So what are some of the risks to people? Well, mainly the human health risks, they come from two sources. There's some direct exposure to sediments from folks that are along the riverbanks, but most significant in terms of risk is fish consumption, consumption of resident fish. And the highest risk is to infants of nursing mothers that are consumers of resident fish. So that's something where children and infants are the most vulnerable, but it's those resident fish that have the significant restrictions on consumption and need at this point in time to be avoided. But we know that people are fishing and eating those fish in the river, some of them out of economic necessity. So what are the cleanup methods that we use? We have other sediment cleanup sites around the country, including the Duwamish River in Seattle. We use a number of techniques across the nation, including dredging, some capping of sediments. You might dredge to a certain depth and then put a hard cap, an armored cap over that, and then put clean sediments over the top of that to recreate the habitat that's fish friendly. We use some treatment on site where there are chemicals that can be treated on site. And then in some areas, monitored natural recovery and enhanced natural recovery are used. This is a very active river with strong currents and heavy uses like those ships that I talked about. In areas where you know the sediments are going to be disturbed, those are areas where active remediation is necessary. There are some quiet areas of the river that are back eddies and so on, and that are perhaps not so heavily contaminated, where you can rely on the clean sediments coming in to allow the river to recover naturally. And we can enhance that sometimes with a layer of soil with activated carbon. Sometimes the river in certain portions will be able to recover itself, but there are some very hot spots that need active remediation. So the alternatives that we've put forward in the feasibility study, this shows the range of alternatives on this map. They range from alternative A, which is no action, to alternative G, which is the most aggressive in terms of footprint. As you look at these colors on this, the dark red is alternative B, the one that would have the lowest amount of active remediation in the river, and they progressively get larger footprints in terms of C, D, E, F, and G. And you'll see that the riverbanks have some significant levels of contamination, but there are also very significant hotspots, about 18 quite contaminated hotspots in the river that require active remediation. What are our cleanup options? Well, alternative B is represented on the left. It shows a higher percentage of monitored natural recovery and a lower percentage of active remediation and dredging and capping. When you get out all the way to alternative G, you'll see that there's more active remediation, including significantly more capping and dredging. So the costs are driven by how much active remediation you have in the river. The levels of cleanup get more significant as you move farther out in terms of the alternatives. How and when should we engage with the community? Well, we're out there right now collaborating with the Oregon DEQ and the City of Portland and others to put information sessions together. As you can see, we've done many of those and we'll continue to do those through March. In April, when the proposed plan comes out, we plan a very aggressive series of public meetings and public outreach. We're seeking oral comments and written comments, and certainly we expect there to be a lot of focus on this come April when that proposed plan is out and we have that 60 days of public process. So I think that's it. I did want to emphasize that we're working closely with Dick Peterson and his staff at Oregon DEQ. They're doing a great job of helping us sharpen the focus on what's most important in terms of the river to Oregonians and to Portland. And we feel very good about the intense work that is going on by the state on source control and also with respect to just helping us make sure that we've got the right focus as we put that proposed plan out on the street. So that's it for us. Okay. And
can you drive our bus?
Yes.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dick Peterson. I'm Director of Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality. And first of all, I want to thank you for scheduling this briefing. I know you're in a very busy time right now taking time to just understand and know what the path forward to clean up Portland Harbor is important for you to understand. So I really appreciate you being there. Go ahead. And before I get into this, I want to echo what Dennis said in terms of our working together. We're in constant contact with each other as responsible for our own organizations to make sure that we're driving towards the finish line as far as getting Portland Harbor cleaned up, which I think we all agree is a very important thing to do. I'm here to talk about source control, but before I do that, I want to talk a little bit about what our role is in terms of working on the work that EPA is on the Superfund site. Now, it's an important distinction to note that the Superfund site is the bed and banks of the river. And so there's obviously more work than that I'm going to get into. Our job at DEQ is to coordinate with all state agencies in the governor's office in providing input into the products and the work that EPA is doing that. We do that because we're funded through an agreement that's paid for by the Lower Willamette Group, the parties that have stepped up and agreed to do the investigation. They're paying for our work, and I think they do appreciate our involvement in the project. We have a lot of technical input that we can provide. We have experts that have done a lot of work in Portland Harbor. There is a Superfund site within the Superfund site called McCormick and Baxter. It was a former wood treating facility that was listed some years ago. DEQ was given responsibility to lead that site, and we finished cleanup of that probably 10 years ago. I'm proud to say that we've stopped the flow of creosote into the river and put in place an opportunity for reuse of that particular piece of property. So we bring a lot of technical experience with our staff and providing input to the broader Portland Harbor Superfund process. So by doing that, we provide input and comments. We participate in technical meetings, all the things that might help EPA as they get their responsibilities done to get to the record of decision. We also coordinate closely, not just with EPA, but the six tribes that are involved here through an agreement, and the trustees, NOAA, Fishery, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and our own Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. So we spend a lot of time as a state, not just as DEQ, providing input to path forward on cleaning up Portland Harbor. Thanks, Dennis. First of all, I want to talk about, I'm going to spend the rest of my time talking about source control. And we're the lead agency to ensuring that current sources of contamination to the river are controlled. We call this kind of the cleanup before the cleanup, because the investment of money to actually clean up Portland Harbor bed and banks, we have to provide a guarantee or assurance that it's not going to be recontaminated. So our work has been really focused a lot on the environmental cleanup of areas that could, in fact, or do flow contaminants to the river. And we've been working on this for over 20 years. We've been well invested in a lot of the properties in characterizing cleanup and actually initiating cleanup in some of these contaminated properties. So to facilitate the source control decisions that we're making, DEQ and EPA developed a joint source control strategy, because I felt, as EPA does, it's critically important that we can say the state is on it in terms of ensuring that the investments that are made aren't going to be undone by contaminants flowing in. So our process looked at three pathways: groundwater flowing into the river, bank erosion, and stormwater discharges, and what we need to do to control that the contaminants that might be flowing into the river and contaminating bed and banks. And so we work closely with EPA and others to ensure the work that we're doing is okay with them, because what we don't want to do is do something and have it suggested that we didn't do it well enough. So we do that by working with a number of parties and up and down the river individually in agreements that we have within this study area. Okay, Dennis, next slide. Thank you. This map has a lot of detail in it, and certainly I'm not asking you to study it and look at it, although it is available on our webpage. But this details maps, it's like I said, it's hard to see, but it does show the most important sites up and down the river that we've been working on for many, many years. And we have been working with about 170 sites up and down the river on upland source control, like I've talked to you about before. This particular map on our webpage is interactive, so if you have it, you can click on any one of these boxes and learn specifically what we've done at each one of these sites. And we're continually updating this map as progress is going forward. And source control has been implemented at about 125 of the sites that are identified on here, and pathways are looked at and being controlled. So I'm going to just give you a couple of examples of what this means, because often what we hear about Superfund is nothing's being done, which isn't true. I mean, a lot of work is going on, and this demonstrates that through the investment of individuals, parties working with DEQ, that lots of dollars and money has been spent to control contamination, and I think we have pretty much a really good working relationship with businesses to get to the end to control their sources. This example, next, thanks, Dennis. This example here is the Arkema site. And it's an example of stormwater and groundwater source control action that we've initiated. Arkema was a former chemical manufacturing facility, and they manufactured DDT and related compounds in the late 40s to early 50s. And the plant closed in 2001, and we oversaw the demolition of all the buildings that were part of that, and contaminated levels in stormwater have decreased, as shown by the bars here. The first bar shows the DDT data from the initial assessment in 1999, and that was through the stormwater pathway. The second bar to the right of that shows DDT after a focused soil removing and capping that was done on the site. And the third bar, clear to the right, shows DDT data after a new stormwater system was constructed in 2012, and it includes a site-wide cap, channels to collect all the stormwater, and conveyance to a football field-sized settling basin, then a sand filter to filter out contaminants and pollutants. And we're currently waiting for the results of a pilot study to see if that's all working, to more enhancements need to be made. I don't know what the final cost of all of that is, but you can imagine that it's a pretty hefty investment from Arkema and companies to implement this particular action. The next one is Everett's Oregon Steel. It's located at the far northern end of the Superfund site across the tip of Savi Island. And this summer, they completed soil removal, riprap stabilization, and laying back of steep sections of the bank, as can be seen in these pictures. These are significant source control measures that will prevent PCBs and metals in slag used for bank fill many years ago from getting into the river. These photos show the south section of the bank work in progress, and then the extensive plantings recently completed to further improve stability and fish and wildlife habitat in the river. The northern section, which isn't shown here, is even longer, with a total of 1,700 linear feet of bank remediation. So these are just two examples of the many, many sites that we're working on in progress being made. These obviously are pretty big investments and big control measures, and not necessarily indicative of every site that we're working on, but there's a lot of good work going on to control pollution that's going in. So my last slide is, in November of 2014, we submitted to EPA a report that summarizes the work that we've done with source control. And we also produced a video that shows in video terms what has been done, and certainly that's available on our website if you care to see it. An updated version of the source control report will be submitted to EPA at the end of March to inform EPA's proposed plan for remedial action. As Dennis pointed out, that the proposed plan is going to be coming out here first part of April. In total, we've identified about 500 commercial and industrial properties around the Superfund reach
170 sites were screened in for further evaluation, and source control has been implemented on one or more pathways at approximately 125 of those sites. The source control evaluation is substantially complete, and plans are in place to complete the remaining of it before the cleanup occurs in Superfund, and the risk of recontamination is seriously reduced. And our report to EPA has been and will be that EPA can move forward because we have controlled sources in the river, and that should not be a barrier to implementing a record of decision that's coming forth. So with that, I'm finished.
Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Richard Whitman, Governor Brown's Natural Resource Policy Advisor. Thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning and talk to you about Portland Harbor. I'm going to bat cleanup and talk at really a fairly high level about the harbor and some of the basically three things. The interest of Oregonians in the harbor. What the state rules are with regard to the cleanup that you've heard about from the prior two witnesses. And then finally, as we move toward an EPA decision on a cleanup plan, what some of the themes that the state has been communicating to EPA in terms of remedy selection. But let me start by thanking the committee. This is timely. We are going to have a proposed cleanup plan for the harbor. Finally, after 15, 16 years now, and we're very happy about that. But there is going to be a lot of public attention on the harbor and the harbor cleanup here, particularly in the next year. So we view the opportunity to brief you all as part of the public engagement process that is going to be critical that Oregonians feel some sense of ownership and ability to influence the outcome here. So appreciate your doing this now. It's very timely. I also want to just note that a little bit of what Director Peterson testified to, it's not as though nothing has been happening for the last 15, 16 years. There has been a lot of actual on-the-ground cleanup work going on, and it's actually a major success story in Oregon, the cleanup work that has occurred so far, and the fact that we have stopped the bleeding, if you will, in terms of additional damage to the harbor and resources in the harbor and health of folks who use the resources in the harbor. And then finally, also appreciation to Regional Administrator McLaren for coming down for this briefing this morning. He's got a lot of things on his plate. We are in the final year of the Obama administration, and EPA is very committed to getting to a decision here in the next year. And if there's one thing that you take away from the hearing today, it would be the strong support that Oregon has to getting to a decision on a cleanup plan so that we can tell Oregonians, we can tell residents in the city of Portland that we are on a definite path to finally get this done. So let me back up and talk a little bit about the importance of the harbor to Oregonians. First of all, in terms of the economy of Oregon, there are a number of reports on the economic impacts of Portland Harbor and the cleanup that are out there right now. I'm not going to go into those reports. They're available if you're interested in detail. But just to give you a quick sense, we're looking at something on the order of at least 5,000 direct jobs that are in river-dependent industry within this cleanup area. If you start looking at non-river-dependent jobs as well, you get up to close to, and you look at direct and indirect jobs from all this economic activity, it gets up as high as almost 65,000 jobs. So very important to the economy of Portland and the state. This is also the area where many of our export industries take raw materials from elsewhere in the state and ship them to parts elsewhere. And as you all know, the economy of Oregon is very heavily dependent on exports. So not only the direct jobs involved in the harbor, but it links to much of the rest of the economy in the state. So, in terms of industrial land supply, this is also one of the areas in the city of Portland where there is opportunity for the future, for development, for industrial development and other economic activity to occur in the future. If we can get this area cleaned up and get some certainty for landowners, there's enormous opportunity here for economic development and growth in this part of the city. And that's important not just for the city, but for the entire metro region and really for the entire state. This is really a key cornerstone location. So that's the economic importance of this area. It's also important, as Administrator McLaren pointed out, as a food source for many Oregonians. We have economically disadvantaged communities that are making heavy use of this area as a food source. And related to that, but different, it is also a cultural resource for our Native American tribes, and both in terms of the food importance, but just it's part of the heritage of our tribes as well. And they have a significant role in all of this. And then finally, when you think about the Willamette River upstream of this area, for those of you who are familiar with Portland, there has been an explosion in public use of the Willamette River over the last few years. And there is that opportunity in the lower river at some point in the future as well. So recreational use, enjoyment of Oregonians, part of our tourism industry, the whole identity of the city of Portland is really around the river. So the interests are large in terms of this cleanup effort. In terms of the state's role, it's also important that the committee understand the state has a lot of different roles here with the harbor. You've heard from Director Peterson this morning about DEQ's role on early action, getting some of the cleanup going here in terms of source control, of stopping the bleeding, if you will, of contamination going into the harbor. But our Oregon Health Authority, public health folks are also important technical advisors on this in terms of the public health aspects of the cleanup. Our Department of State Lands and State Land Board is the custodian of public trust resources, including fisheries, but also navigation and commerce, has a role here, both as a custodian of those resources, but also as a landowner, as a property owner. The Oregon Department of Transportation is also a landowner in the harbor. I think Director Peterson mentioned the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife serves on the trustee council for the natural resource damage aspect of cleanup. And we haven't talked about that a lot today, but in addition to cleaning up the harbor to protect human health and the environment, there is also a restoration component of Superfund, which is to restore damages that have been done to natural resources. And so ODFW is on the trustee council for that. We have other agencies, Parks and Recreation, which administers the Willamette Greenway, the Marine Board, which has responsibilities in terms of river management, that are also involved in this. DEQ, with DEQ's leadership, we have regular team meetings of all these state interests to coordinate comments that we're providing to EPA, and also to coordinate what the state is saying, the input that the state is giving, so that we are giving consistent technical information and consistent, frankly, policy input into decision makers on the harbor. So I want to assure you that there is a mechanism in place for that coordination to occur. It's been there for quite some time and has been quite effective. So the last thing I want to talk about is just to talk a little bit about some of the state concerns as we move toward a cleanup remedy from EPA later this year. I mentioned that the state is a landowner, and so specifically the Department of State Lands owns the bed and banks of the Willamette River. And the Oregon Department of Transportation also owns lands within the Superfund site that have been identified as a potential source of contamination. So the state, along with the City of Portland, the Port of Portland, are public entities that have some potential responsibility for paying for some portion of the cleanup of the harbor. So that comes to you all as legislators. At some point, we are going to be, in probably not the too distant future, we will be back to talk to you all about potential state role as a participant in getting the cleanup going from a financial point of view. So the state is thinking about that. The City of Portland is certainly thinking about that. The Port of Portland is thinking about that, as are other private potentially responsible parties. When we have a cleanup plan announced from EPA, hopefully at the end of this year, the next phase will be to move into something called remedial design and really the detailed work about how to move the cleanup forward, specifically around particular portions of the harbor. And I think that's when we will start to develop a work plan, if you will, for how do we continue the early action and move into to broader scale cleanup of the harbor. Other themes, other state concerns, as I've mentioned already, staying on schedule. We're 15, 16 years into this. Every year of delay on the harbor is a lost, it's an opportunity cost in terms of economic development and economic opportunity in the harbor. The more we delay, the more we're losing opportunity for that redevelopment to occur. We are also concerned about cost effectiveness, as are many of the other parties involved in the harbor. So we both need to be able to assure the public that we are protecting health and the environment, but at the same time doing so in a responsible, cost-effective manner. And then finally, as I mentioned, having a good public engagement process so that Portland residents and all Oregonians feel that they've had a voice in the outcome here and determining how we move this forward. So this is a high priority level issue for Governor Brown, as well as Director Peterson and a number of state agencies. I know it is of significant interest to the chair also and a number of other legislators. So we appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today and expect we'll be back talking to you more in the coming months as this moves forward. So thank you. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Holby.
Thank you. I have two questions. I assume this came about, like you were mentioning, from hundreds of years of, or at least 100 years of intensive use. And, you know, obviously we didn't have the knowledge of the contaminants and what they could do to our environment and people and animals and such. Do you feel like that we have the proper regulations and enforcement capabilities to prevent things like this to happen in the future is the first part of my question.
Madam Chair, Representative Holby, I'll start with DQ statute and authority is pretty strong in terms of how you control toxic use of materials that might be put on land. I mean, there's hazardous waste laws that come to us from EPA that we implement. And so the practices of many, many, many years ago, as you know, was the best way to get rid of things is just to put it in the river, right? I mean, and that was just a common practice, not all across the country. And that's in a large part what we're dealing with here. And over the years, practices have really improved such that there are pretty tight controls in terms of how potential for things getting into waterways. So I feel certainly definitely controls are in place to prevent a scale of this type. The things we're preparing for are things like accidental spills, you know, a ship run aground or breaking of a pipeline or something like that. That happens on occasion, but we're well positioned to respond to those things.
Does the EPA concur with that?
I do.
At the federal level?
I think the source control is to deal with the legacy, and the cleanup is to deal with the legacy. The industrial regulations and controls that are in place are strong now. We're in a different era, but the long-term accidents do happen. Both spills, you have barges and other things in the river, so we're vigilant about that, and we have good spill response programs for those sort of things. But part of the timing on a cleanup is timing it so that the source control work is done in advance of the river cleanup so that you don't recontaminate the river, and we feel we're in that place now. We have a lot of confidence. We are reviewing the source control plan, but there's been some tremendous work done there, and I'm pretty confident in the work that the state of Oregon has done.
And my second question is has there been testing for hot spots downstream into the Columbia? And do you see concerns there that may need attention?
So there's a couple of things I would add in that regard. There will be more data collected as we move into the design phase and so on. The tribes are particularly concerned about that issue, and so we've just completed a round of consultations with 5 of the 6 tribes where Jim and I and Cammie all have gone out. We've had very thoughtful conversations with them, but many of them are concerned about the impacts of the cleanup itself on the main stem of the Columbia River. So we've talked to them about the techniques for precision dredging, the techniques for making sure that you don't recontaminate downstream as you do the cleanup, and that is going to be a significant focus, I think, of the public comments and a focus that we will have in making sure that the work is done, takes care of not only the contamination in the river, but does not contaminate downstream as well. The Superfund site itself is this 10-mile stretch of the river, but we are likely to be adding some focus on impacts on the main stem of the Columbia in the proposed plan and in the record of decision.
Follow-up? Yeah, just a quick follow-up. So I guess part of my question is so you have testing that's been done in the Columbia so you know what your baseline sort of is for what the future impact of to the Columbia may be from this process?
So I think, we have water quality information, probably not as much sediment testing down there because, the data that drove where this Superfund site is showed that this is the heavily contaminated area that we're focused on cleaning up. We will have a focus on making sure that the cleanup that's done here is done right. We have a toxics reduction strategy for the whole Columbia River Basin. A lot of what impacts the Columbia River main stem is what we call area sources, which are everything from agriculture to fertilizers on lawns that people put on their lawns. So we are working with a variety of folks all the way up the Columbia River watershed to reduce toxics and reduce impacts on the Columbia River main stem. And there are several other Superfund sites. The upper Columbia River is one that we do have more Superfund work going on up there. But yes, there is a focus on the Columbia River. This cleanup plan will deal with the 10 miles of the river, but we're paying attention to the Columbia too.
Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Richard, I guess this would probably be for you. Last session or session before, we've had some contentious bills that have been going across here dealing with this issue between insurance paying for this or whether or not it should be coming out of the actual business person's pocket for some of the cleanup and everything. And, these are contentious bills that went across the House floor. And with all the recent news stories that note that regardless of who may initially pay the bill, how much of this cleanup cost will ultimately be borne on the people of Portland, the citizens of Oregon, ratepayers, taxpayers, and things like that? And is the governor concerned about whether the Portland community themselves can afford a multi-billion dollar cleanup? I mean, is this something that they're going to be able to handle?
So, Chair Peterson, Representative Widener, So the governor is concerned, as I said, about the cost and cost effectiveness of the cleanup plan. What we do not want to see is a cleanup plan released that pushes everybody into corners in terms of litigation and results in years of additional delay in terms of the cleanup. So we're looking for an outcome here that is protective, as I said, of public health and the environment, but that also provides sufficient clarity and certainty to parties so that they have some sense of what their liability may ultimately be and can make informed business decisions about participating in the cleanup. Much of the cost of the cleanup is likely to be borne by entities that are here in the Portland metro area, that are in and around the harbor. I know there's been some media that, you know, the cleanup costs will be borne by multinational corporations and paid for by invisible people from elsewhere in the country. But these are real costs for the state of Oregon, for other public entities, and for companies that do business here in Oregon. So cost is a major concern here. And DEQ has been doing a great job of providing very practical, pragmatic advice on ways to have a cost-effective remedy, one that is still protective for public health and the environment. So I think we feel pretty good about where we are right now. But until we see the proposed plan, we won't really know where we're at in terms of cost ultimately. So we're very engaged. We're very concerned about the cost issue. And I think that's part of the reason for the hearing today is to start to familiarize this legislature with some of the issues that we're likely to be facing in a year.
Pablo.
I mean, the concern I have, Richard, how much communication do we have with the federal government? Because the federal government had a big part in probably a lot of the contamination that's there. Are we putting pressure on the federal government to pick up the tab on some of this, too?
So, Representative, we are in communication with the federal government. The issue of who pays for what and how costs are allocated is being dealt with through a separate cost allocation process that's going on independently of the work that EPA and DEQ are doing on the cleanup remedy. So that is a process that ultimately will lead to an allocation of costs between parties, and the federal government is certainly a participant in that, along with the state and everybody else.
And I'm seeing head nods from the EPA on the back.
Yeah. And then one more question, Madam Chair, for the EPA. Since we have the EPA here, and thank you for being with us. It's not very often that we get honored with your presence in our committee here. So I guess another question I kind of have, because you're kind of heading all of this up and coming from the federal side and everything, but what's the risk assumption that we're dealing with people and everything, and how many people are truly affected by this? What are we looking at as far as public health and everything else, and can you give us an idea of that, what it's doing to people in the community?
Sure. Thank you, Representative Widener, for the question. There is risk. You know, we've done a pretty comprehensive risk assessment along with the input of the potentially responsible parties, the Lower Willamette Group input on that. But as I said, the highest risks are for folks that have infants and are
nursing mothers that are consuming fish. So it is a confined population. But what we do know is that there are people that are fishing in the river despite warning signs and other things that say, you know, it's not safe to eat the fish from the river. Our objective is to get the river clean enough so that people who may, out of economic necessity, taking their protein from the river are better protected. We will never get to a place where we get to a pristine level in the river, so there will always be some risk for the most at risk here, but what our objective is in these cleanups is to reduce risk to an acceptable level to get to a place where both for humans and wildlife, this is at an acceptable level of risk. And so there has been a lot of discussion of that issue, as I'm sure you're aware. That will be a focus of the proposed plan and the comments that we get. We are very focused on 9 criteria that we have. One of those is cost effectiveness, but several of the others are based on reducing risk and reducing risk both to people and to wildlife. So getting that balance right is part of what people will be looking at in terms of the proposed plan. We feel that the proposed plan that we're going to put forward for Portland Harbor is going to be a good plan that is taking into account those concerns. But the public process that we have ahead of us is really important in terms of fine-tuning it and making sure that we actually get the right balance and get it right. And you might understand that we're getting incoming from all sides on this. The tribes would like us to have an alternative G plus that goes beyond alternative G. We have folks who feel that the river can repair itself through natural processes. We're somewhere in the middle, and we're trying to be data-driven, science-driven, and risk-driven in our decision on this. But the public input, including the input from the state, is going to be very important as we get to a final record of decision before the end of the year.
If I may, one little follow-up.
We have a couple more people, and we have a public hearing to get back to, so this will be the last one.
Okay. Just real quick, because I love to wakeboard, I love to water ski, and I love to do it on the Willamette because you get smooth water usually put in up at Newburgh. And one of the big concerns, people will always go, the Willamette's gross, it's grody, you shouldn't be out there and doing this and everything else. Is that true or not? Even though I like it when you make those statements because I'm hoping it gets people off the water so I have more room to myself, are they true or not?
So recreation in the water there is safe. I think there is.
Well, not there. I'm the entire Willamette.
Well, the entire Willamette, it is safe. I think in the 10 miles that we're talking about here, contact with the sediments in some spots is not safe. And also, the sediments in the bottom are not safe as well. So one of the cleanup objectives is to get those riverbanks and those sediments to a level that reduces the risks and makes it safer. But the water column itself, part of the reason that salmon that pass through are safe to eat is because the water column itself is reasonably good shape. It will be better when we're all done, and the source control has made it much better, including things like the big pipe project in Portland. So there's been quite a lot of investment to get that river to a much cleaner state. But the sediments themselves and the riverbanks themselves that have these heavy contaminants that have been there as a legacy need to be removed and remediated.
Okay. Representative Reardon.
Thank you. Thank all of you for being here, for your work and your dedication to this project. And it was very helpful this morning. I think much, much better idea of the cost, the impact. But just a general, more of a, almost an emotional reaction to this project, and I just tee you up. There's this tremendous opportunities, but it has, if you acknowledge, it's taken so long to get to where we are now. How do we change that? Is there somebody that's really championing this project, that really owns it, who's willing to stand up and be on the front pages of the news and say, I own this project, I'm going to pull all this together, I'm going to make it happen, it's going to be on time, it's going to be wonderful. Who owns this? Who's excited? I think you're going away, right? I mean, you're, right? And Dick's, we load Dick up with stuff all the time here, so I know he doesn't have it 100%. And I'm sorry, Richard, I really don't know exactly what you do. We need to do coffee someday.
But I don't know either.
Who really champions this project and is going to make it happen quicker on a more rapid pace than what is happening now?
So I can start with that, and then these two can add as well. I think that this has taken a long time. It has taken a long time for some good reasons. The source control needed to be to a point where we were ready to have a proposed plan. The data gathering had to be done to get to a place where we could do a proposed plan. This has been contentious because it's going to be an expensive cleanup, and as I said, we're getting it from all sides. But we are very committed to getting a proposed plan out and hopefully getting a record of decision. That creates the opportunity then for the City of Portland and the State of Oregon and the PRPs, the Lower Willamette Group, who have shown a lot of willingness and leadership to say, we're ready to step up, we want a plan, we want to get this going. It's going to take all of us to move this forward and make it happen. As Richard mentioned, we have a next phase, which is getting agreement on the allocation and then also the design work and getting everybody agreeing on implementing the designs. That will take a year or two to get most of that done. There are some early actions that I think can move very quickly ahead as soon as we have a proposed a record of decision done on this. But it's going to take everybody rallying around this and saying, we've now got a decision. It's time to move and implement. The career staff at EPA are very committed to that. I think the state is very committed to that. I think the Lower Willamette Group is very committed to that. We know the City of Portland is very committed to that as well.
One short follow-up.
Follow-up.
I know it takes all of us. Who's going to get fired if it doesn't happen?
Well, again, it won't be me, but...
good to hear.
In the new administration, and that is a central point of EPA accountability on this. I am really trying hard to deliver this during the remaining time.
Yeah, and I appreciate it.
And if I might, just real quickly, Madam Chair, Representative Verdon, thanks for the question. I will tell you right now, DQ, myself, is absolutely committed to carry this thing through. I mean, Dennis and EPA are probably tired of hearing me say over and over again is that when the ROD is implemented, issued, it has to be something that's implementable quickly. DQ standing up, we're ready to step in and play as much role as we can to get this cleaned up so that we can go on. The Willamette's a spectacular river, and people use it. You can swim in it, you can boat in it. We have these things that we have to deal with because if it's a big river, and this is a big thing, and we need to get on with it. And I, for one, am absolutely committed to ensure that it moves and doesn't continue long-term process, so we're not back here many years from now saying the same thing.
Okay, Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for all your work on this challenging thing. I had a chance to tour the Milltown site out in Montana. I don't know how many years. I think in 2006 they started the work on that, and pretty interesting. I asked there how much of the money they felt would be spent on actual remediation, how much on planning, and they said about 30% was spent on planning of the total cost. The total cost was in the hundreds and hundreds of millions, I'm sure. The part of your planning exercise, other than I just would be curious if it's a similar number, but the part that's of greatest interest to me is in this process that we're just about to enter into, the EPA's proposed cleanup plan. At what point, if ever, does it become baked in? In other words, those of us who are interested in the total scope of the cleanup and the degree of cleanliness when we finally get there, as you mentioned, it's not going to be perfect, but there's a whole bunch of gray area in there and a whole bunch of litigation generally. We can anticipate where people say, no, it's not clean enough, and we say, yes, it is, and then we litigate, and then I don't know what we do. But the question is, at what point, for those of us interested in who's going to pay and then the how much, the who we've been heard about, but the how much is dependent upon this plan that's going to be forthcoming. I'm just curious if people wanted to go in and say, we think the plan extends to too clean, to just way beyond all measure of reason. Are they being listened to now, or is this going to be a thing that they will argue when we see that plan and they begin to challenge it?
So, you know, I'm going to answer that in the thank you, Representative Vance, for the question. I think you have to look at that in the context of Superfund nationally. Generally, when we get to the point of a proposed plan, we a very high percentage of instances get agreement from the parties to move forward to implement that plan. Here we have the Lower Willamette Group that has committed really hundreds of millions of dollars already to develop the data, to develop the drafts of the remedial investigation and feasibility study and so on. So there's a lot of investment already in getting to a proposed plan. When we have a record of decision, that allocation process that Richard mentioned is where people meet and hopefully come to agreement on the allocation of the cost. The proposed plan itself and the record of decision really fix in place what the obligations are going forward. There is a lot of concern about making sure that all of the parties participate and do their fair share in this. We have enforcement authorities at EPA to make sure that happens if people are not participating in the allocation process. But generally, and with a very high level of success around the country, people have worked through that allocation process, have stepped up, and have undertaken the cleanup. So I think here, we are very committed at EPA to making sure that the message that we send is you need to participate. If you're on the river and you're one of the potentially responsible parties, you need to work with all of the parties to come to a settlement in that allocation process and come to a settlement with us around the cleanup costs and responsibilities. I'm confident that will happen here. You know, there's been a lot of talk about people walking away or, you know, who's going to pay the lion's share and so on. That allocation process is important, but us sending the signals that you must participate and we have a lot of processes to make sure that people do participate is something we're going to be delivering to folks as well.
Madam Chair, Representative Bentz, thanks for bringing up Milltown Dam. You might know that I'm from Montana and work for the state of Montana. I was actually in charge of that element of cleanup. And one really distinct difference between there and here is there's one responsible party by and large for Milltown Dam. And that's just kind of a piece of that whole system there. You got the Clark Fork River, upland areas around Anaconda, Montana, where the smelter is, and extensive groundwater contamination beneath Butte, but there's just one responsible party, which probably made things a little more easy to negotiate, but not, I wouldn't say they were easy, but yeah, that was a pretty massive cleanup, and there was a lot of planning, but I think those costs are pretty right on what you said. Yeah.
One follow-up. Thank you. I have to tell you, it was pretty impressive standing up on the hill looking down into that project. But what was impressive is the immense amount of money being spent to clean up mistakes of years past. And I mean, that was something else, which is exactly what this is. So I want to go back to the people around the table. It's been my experience that sometimes it's hard to get everybody around the table and people pop up afterwards and litigate. Is there is this probable here? And the reason I'm saying this is I just wonder how you ever tell people there's an end to this. And I'm reminded of all the phrases like adaptive management and changing the height of the goalpost, all the place of the goal, you know, all that. Is there something firm that people can rely upon as they gather around the table to try to put a circle around what it is they're supposed to do, a measure of what we're supposed to do?
So, Representative Vance and members of the committee, that is the subject of a lot of very clear-eyed discussion between us and the state right now. We are sitting around the table with Dick and his staff, and Richard has been involved in this as well, around looking at what can be done to make it a clear enough record of decision that And again, I will say we have enforcement authorities as well that go beyond just the record of decision, but a lot of effort going into trying to make the record of decision clear enough about the responsibilities of the parties here that people will be compelled to come to the table and work this out amongst themselves. If they don't, then we do have enforcement authorities that we can bring to play to drive them to the table. And we hope that we never get to that. Our objective is always to have people work together to divide up the responsibilities based on the data and the science and the proposed plan that we put together and the record of decision. If that doesn't happen, we do have mechanisms to make it happen. And I know there's a lot of anxiety about that here. That's why we're in such good discussions with the state about how to come out with a record of decision that drives that as much as we can here.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to talk about proportionality. Mr. Peterson, in your testimony, you're talking about historically common practices were to use the river as the means to get rid of whatever. But for a good part of the historical presence of activities on that port, it's been the federal government, i.e., our military-industrial complex and so forth during World War II that was a prime occupant that was responsible for a lot of that. So I guess the question is, in your report or in your recommendations, how are you determining proportionality regarding federal government responsibility, state, and then the private sector?
So we have a process of identifying.
Throwing darts at the wall, yeah, this, I would have hoped before finding it.
Well, thank you for the question, Representative Johnson. We have a process of tracking back the historical ownerships and uses of the various properties in and along the river. And so we do identify those parties, do notify them. In the allocation process, people are working together with all of the folks that they believe are responsible, including the federal government. I can't speak for that group of the federal government because they're represented by the Department of Justice, you know, independently in that process. But what we do is we try and identify what are the contaminated areas, what are the areas that need to be cleaned up, and then there is a tracking back of the of the historical uses along the river, and that then becomes part of the discussion in the allocation process.
And that'll be something we can identify clearly in your report or in the recommendation.
So again, that is a lot of the discussion that we're having with the state.
You'll show your arithmetic and how you get the final answer.
So that is a lot of the work we're trying to do with the state, is to be as clear as possible about what the responsibilities in the river are, and the record of decision will then drive many of those other processes to divide up the responsibilities.
Will certain contaminants have a higher cost associated to them than others?
So again, thank you for the question, Representative Johnson. The hottest hot spots, which may involve more dredging or more intense capping techniques, will be more expensive areas. There is a cost associated with being in the river, and there are limited windows when you can be in the river, fish windows, when you can actually do that construction work. So the heaviest construction work, like dredging and heavy capping, is more expensive, and that will correlate, as you saw in that map that I showed, with the hottest hotspots in the river. And there are some areas of the river where there'll be more general responsibility that are less intense remedies that involve natural recovery or enhanced natural recovery. But it'll be pretty clear where the active remediation is, and then there'll be a tracking to the properties that are associated with that.
And then just one final, if I could, Madam Chair.
Yes, follow up.
You've got some series of public information meetings coming up. I'm looking at the Dishman Center, Wilson High School, and so forth and so on. And I'm just wondering what you're looking for in that process. Because if you go into these meetings with the resident population there and ask them, should we do everything physically possible to mitigate this and clean up the harbor, I'm pretty sure the answer you're going to get. But if you frame the question with, what's a higher value for you, is it spending whatever it takes to clean up Portland Harbor or a full instructional year for your K-12 students? Because that's ultimately from the state. Those are questions we're going to have to balance as policymakers. And I'm just wondering how you're going to frame the conversation with folks.
Chair Vega Peterson, Vice Chair Johnson, our role certainly is to tee up all those questions. This conceptual plan, preferred plan that's coming out is an EPA plan, and they're responsible for ensuring that there's adequate public participation in that. And what we're telling them is making sure not only are the venues right, but the right information is getting out to get that kind of question to them. You know, honestly, those kinds of questions go back to EPA, and they'll deliberate on that, whether or not that balances somewhere in order to making a different kinds of decision. Our role, as Mr. Whitman pointed out, is really to ensure that there's practical cleanup actions taken that are protective and practical from this. What does it cost? How is capping employed in a way that's most effective but also practical and reasonable to control that? So, you know, that's where we, DEQ, are weighing in, knowing, as Representative Widener pointed out, that down the road there's going to be a cost to this to a whole host of people to get this river back in business, and we got to have to ensure that those costs are reasonable and protective. That's how we're weighing in. The public process is, as Dennis pointed out, is playing out in a whole bunch of different places. They're doing a good job of getting preliminary information out to get people ready, but those are the kind of questions I think that are they're hoping to get feedback from in different venues, and then it goes to them to make that final record of decision.
Thank you.
So, Vice Chair Johnson, members of the committee, our objective is to have a fully informed public out of the public process, but just as importantly, a fully informed set of PRPs and government institutions. And I'm looking forward to the comments that we get from those folks on that, particularly the state and the tribes and the city of Portland, because I think their input is part of the cost effectiveness discussion that goes along with this.
All right. Well, thank you guys. Thank you all very much for coming here today. I think that, you know, it's true that the Willamette River is one of the major economic engines for our state, and this is a major project in terms of the viability of it continuing to be so and also making it a livable working river for all people of the state, whether it's recreation or tribal or food. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you spending the time here today, coming down from out of state to be here and talk about this. You know, I think we're going to be paying very close attention to the proposed cleanup plan that's coming out, and I know that there'll probably be a lot more discussion around it then, and especially, you know, following the record of decision on what the role for the state will be. So I appreciate you helping kick off that conversation here very much. Thank you. All right. With that, I'm going to close the informational session. Republicans were caucusing right now, and so they had to leave. So I'm going to carry over the public hearing and work session until Tuesday for Senate Bill 1547. Anything else? So with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the hearing of the House Energy and Environment Committee. House Energy and Environment Committee. Hearing of the